Well, I think we'll go ahead and get started again with the next presentation. And our next presenter is Nathan Mueller, and he was going to talk about irrigated corn and soybean response to starter and foliar fertilizer application.
Thank you, Dorvar. Brief introduction of why we're kind of looking at the use of starter nutrients, including both macro and micronutrients, as well as supplementing with foliar fertilizers. We get a lot of questions, especially to the extension soil fertility staff at K-State, with producers asking, given the price of corn and soybeans, should I be adding micronutrients to my starter fertilizer? And another common question is, should I be supplementing with foliar fertilizers? To answer these questions, we've kind of designed a study around it, and these are the objectives we've came up with. To assess plant nutrient concentration and grain yield response to starter fertilizers with the addition of micronutrients, to assess grain yield response to foliar fertilizers, and third, to evaluate soil and plant analysis for explaining some of these plant responses to starter and foliar fertilizers. I'm going to focus on the 2010 data that we have for the study. It's a three-year study. It's ongoing this year and will continue next year. It has a we're looking at both corn and soybeans in Kansas. As you can see, we have two sites. Both of these sites, Clay Center, Kansas, and Scandian, Kansas, are both in north central Kansas. Both corn sites are on silt loam soils. One's in no-till and ridge-till, both planted at the end of April. For the soybean sites, located very close to where the corn was, and I want to remind everybody, these are all irrigated sites that we're dealing with, high yield potential environments. The Clay Center site, I want to note this because it'll come up later in the discussion, but it's the only site where we had a sandy soil. Again, the creek silt loam soil at Scandia here is a pretty widespread soil in the area, pretty productive. It's a silt loam to silty clay loam, fairly good soil pH, and very productive. I mean, people are getting very high yields in this area. And this is the research station, and again, it's a ridge-till for the soybeans and no-till for the corn. Both soybean crops were planted at the end of May. The design and treatments, it was a factorial arrangement in a randomized complete block design. The starter component had a control, an NP and K plus a micronutrient mix. This was dribbled placed over the row at 140 liters per hectare. The second factor was the foliar component. We had a control, an NP and K plus a micro. This was applied at V6 to V8 in corn, and it was applied at R1 to R2 in soybeans at 187 liters per hectare or 20 gallons per acre. For those of you. And with these two, because it's a factorial arrangement, it ends up a 3x3, so we end up with nine treatment combinations. This micronutrient mix that I'm referring to includes boron, copper, manganese, and zinc as chelated with EDTA, and iron as HEDTA. These are synthetic chelates. The treatment rates for the starter were 5 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen and phosphorus each, and this is actual kilograms per hectare of P, not P2O5, and it was 9 kilograms per hectare of K, and we had 0.6 kilograms per hectare of each of those micronutrients that I had in the previous slide. In terms of the foliar fertilizer rates, we had 2, 1, and 2 kilograms per hectare of NP and K, and 0.2 kilograms per hectare of each of those micronutrients. The measurements and analysis we took a 0 to 15 centimeter sample prior to planting in each experimental unit. We also took whole plant corn samples at V6 to V8, one to look at plant tissue analysis, second to look at early growth. We also have tissue samples that we took in soybeans and the trifoliates, or trifoliates, depending on what you're familiar with, at the R1 to R2 stage, and again, grain yield. Background statistics, we're just running a NOVA in the mixed procedure of SAS, and our significance that we'll be following will be at the 0.1 level. Starting with corn, in terms of early growth, we did see an increase in early growth of corn with the addition of NP and K as starter, which is pretty common. It was a lower soil test. The soil test was around range from 11 to 15, so it wasn't surprising that we saw this at the Scandia location. But when we added the micronutrients to that MP and K starter, we did not see an additional increase in early growth. Clay Center was a high phosphorus site. We had soil test P up to 100 part per million, and we did not see an increase due to the addition of starter at that location over the control. For grain yield at these locations, here, the Clay Center site is in a purple-blue, and Scandia is in gray, and you can see that with the addition of the starter, both the micronutrient and the NP and K, that we did not see a significant increase in yield at either location in corn, even due to the addition of NPK starter at these locations. Moving on to the foliar fertilizer, it's kind of the same trend. No significant increase in yield due to the addition of foliar fertilizers, whether they included micronutrients or not. Moving on to soybeans. Here, real briefly, on the y-axis is megagrams per hectare, and we're again talking about starter fertilizer. Kind of the same trend. On the previous slides I compared, I had both Scandia and Clay Center on the same because there wasn't a difference here. I'm going to focus on each site separately in terms of the soybeans. We did not see a significant difference in yield response due to the addition of starter at this site. Starter fertilizer at Clay Center. We had a significant interaction between starter and foliar at this site, so I'm going to look at the simple effects here. And this would be when we added starter foliar fertilizer when no foliar was applied. And here on the y-axis, megagrams per hectare, and the control MP and K plus that micronutrient mix, we did see a significant increase in yield over both control MP and K. The interesting thing is that we actually saw a yield decrease by adding NP and K starter with the soybeans at this site, which was curious. And it is only one site, and we're trying to tease that out. I'll try to discuss that a little bit more here in the next slide. So when we had that starter, when we added the NP and K starter, and then we had foliar in that situation. So we had, just looking at the simple effects, we had NPK starter was applied, and then the three following different treatments of foliar on top, a control, NP and K plus a micro. We actually saw an increase in yield by the addition of the foliar fertilizer in that situation only. So only in that situation where we had a decrease in yield due to the NPK starter did we actually see a response to the foliars. It's pretty hard to explain this. I'll look at some of the tissue analysis next, but we saw a yield increase both to NP and K and the micronutrient over the control. And it might be that the control treatment had some more noise in it in terms of maybe a lower yield in some of those sites due to something that wasn't part of the treatment. Kind of to explain, maybe try to tease out what's going on here at this Clay Center site, why we maybe saw a response. We have all the soil tests. The soil tests at this site were 7.1 for a pH, not extremely high. It was a sandy site, remember, slightly lower organic matter of 16. The phosphorus was high. We'd consider this a very high soil test phosphorus in Kansas. The soil test zinc, this is a DTPA extraction for zinc, was 4.1, also high. And the copper test, also a DTPA extraction, was 0.3, which in Kansas is considered medium to low in terms of a soil test value. Now, looking at the tissue analysis, as some of the previous authors have discussed, here on phosphorus, we did see a significant increase when we added the NPK starter. So when we added phosphorus, we actually saw an increase in phosphorus. But then when we added the micronutrients, we actually saw a decrease in comparison to when we had that same rate of phosphorus. Moving on to the other metals, again, we added iron, zinc, copper, and manganese. Those were part of the micronutrient treatments. When we added that micronutrient, especially zinc and manganese, we actually saw a decrease in the concentration of both zinc and manganese over the control and the MP&K. And you got to remember this, when we added micronutrients in the starter, we actually saw a yield increase. So we actually had a decrease in tissue zinc and manganese, and we saw a yield increase. One thing I want to point out is copper. We didn't see any change in tissue copper. It was all 5 milligrams per kilogram for each one. That is technically below the nutrient sufficiency range that's in the literature. A lot of this literature for the nutrient sufficiency ranges were generated by a gentleman out of Ohio State in the 1960s, and those nutrient sufficiency ranges for soybeans haven't changed a whole lot since then. His work in Ohio State, it was Benton Jones Jr., was actually 10 to 30. But there's been a lot of literature lately, especially from South America, and a few older papers that have suggested that it might be anywhere from 4 to 7 milligrams per kilogram. So either way, whether we're deficient or low, we're probably one of those two. I'm not saying necessarily the response was due to copper, but that is a possibility. The interesting thing is that we actually saw a decrease in the tissue concentration when we added these micronutrients in this case. A summary, we did not see an increase in early growth or corn yield when we added the micronutrient mix to our traditional starters that farmers are using. In terms of a response, we had one soybean site out of the two in 2010, and it's, you know, this is still the first year of the study, and so there's not, we don't have a lot of site years yet, but we did see a response to starter micronutrients there, and we did see a response to both NP and K and NP play plus a micronutrient mix in that one situation. But you gotta remember there was a significant interaction, so something's going on there with the site, especially with the complicated results of the tissue analysis. Obviously, we need some more site years. I'd like to explore some other statistical analyses, such as multivariate analysis, factor analysis, once we get more additional data in. Some other authors have looked at it in terms of just looking at P removal from the field in the seed, but there's been some significant findings, especially in sulfur, that the sulfur content of soybean seeds is correlated with yield. So it'd be interesting to explore maybe some of the micronutrient analysis of these seeds, especially at that one site in soybeans, to see maybe what we found at the end of the year. Because you got to remember, a tissue sample that we took at R1 is just a slice in time. There's a lot of things can happen after that point. So maybe seed would give us some additional information to help explain what was going on at that location. I think plant analysis is a good fertility tool. It's a good diagnostics tool, especially in research. I think there needs to be some discussion, some ongoing verification of these nutrient sufficiency ranges. They were, again, developed for soybeans, were developed in the 60s, and they haven't changed a whole lot since then, which would suggest they're either fairly robust or that they haven't been assessed a whole lot since then. This year, to kind of help maybe explain responses to foliar, we did take post-tissue analysis after foliar. So in corn, remember we applied the foliar at V6 to V8. We then took ear leaf samples when we had with and without foliar fertilizer. And same thing with soybeans. We took the samples at R1 to R2. We then went back at R3 and took trifoliate samples again to look at, is that foliar application making, is it getting through the cuticle? Is it getting through the leaf and getting taken up by the plant? Because in Kansas, in some additional other studies, especially in foliar, there's a lot of environmental factors that affect the efficiency of that foliar application, whether it can get through that leaf surface or not, especially with temperatures and humidities given at the time of spraying. I'd like to acknowledge our funding sources, my major professor, and my fellow graduate students. With that, I'll take any questions.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. That is a possibility. I've seen some other discussion that you can get a dilution effect, meaning you have a bigger plant or a bigger leaf and that those were diluted. So that is a possibility. We didn't take whole plant biomass above ground or look at leaf area. That would have been great data in retrospect to have to help explain that. So, yes, good point. Yeah. In terms of planting date, late April for corn is pretty common in north central Kansas. Most producers then move to soybeans after. You're right, they're towards the end of May. For high yield environments, it would be my preference that you would plant a little earlier. I would agree. And there's a lot of actually studies here at the conference looking at planting date in soybeans. But if still we had above, 60 to 70 bushel soybeans, so we had pretty good yields, and a long enough growing season. So.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.